How the U.S. government borrows money from the Federal Reserve is not much different from the Abbott and Costello comedy sketch in their movie Buck Privates, where Bud Abbott wants to borrow $50 from Lou Costello. Listen to their routine and compare it with the explanation of how the Federal Reserve works its magic that follows.
Do me a favor, loan me $50. Schmitty, I can't lend you $50.
Oh, yes, you can.
No, I can't. All I got is $40, that's all.
All right, give me the $40 and you owe me $10.
Okay, I owe you $10.
That's right.
How come I owe you $10?
Well, what did I ask you for?
$50.
And how much did you give me?
$40.
So you owe me $10.
That's right. But you owe me $40.
Now, don't change the subject.
I'm not changing the subject. You're trying to change my finances. Come on now, give me my $40.
All right, there's your $40.
Okay.
Now give me the $10 you owe me.
I'm paying you on account.
On account?
On account, I don't know how I owe it to you.
That's the way you feel about it? It's the last time I'll ever ask you for the loan of $50.
Wait a minute, Smitty. How can I loan you $50 now? All I have is $30.
Well, give me the $30 and you owe me $20.
Okay, this is getting worse all the time. First I owe him $10, now I owe him $20.
Well, why do you run yourself into debt?
I'm not running in, you're pushing me.
I can't help it if you can't handle your finances. I do all right with my money.
Hey, you're doing all right with mine, too.
Now, wait a minute. I asked you for the loan of $50, you gave me $30. So you owe me $20. 20 and 30 is 50.
No.
The U.S. government borrows money from the Federal Reserve using the same kind of logic and manipulation of words and numbers as the Abbott and Costello comedy routine. When the U.S. government needs to borrow money, the Treasury creates a bond, which is a fancy word for an IOU, and promises to pay a specified amount of money at a specified interest on a specified date. This bond is evidence of debt, just as an IOU is evidence of debt. This interest-bearing debt is the foundation for this nation's money supply, and its payment is guaranteed by the collateral of all property and income of all U.S. citizens. The Federal Reserve buys this debt simply by making a bookkeeping entry for the amount and writing a check against no funds, and then converts it into paper currency and checkbook money. The U.S. Bureau of Engraving prints the paper currency in whatever denominations or Federal Reserve and charges about 2 cents for each note, regardless of the denomination, which the Federal Reserve pays for by making another bookkeeping entry and writing another bad check. In effect, the Federal Reserve lends the U.S. government its own credit, our credit, and then charges interest on it. Every dollar created by the Federal Reserve system is debt for the citizens of the United States, which the central bank collects interest on, in addition to the interest from the bonds created by the Treasury that put this magic money-making machine in motion. And it gets worse. The Federal Reserve inflates the amount of the bond in order to make even more loans of imaginary dollars and collect more interest on an investment that cost nothing. Under fractional reserve banking, the amount of money a bank can create is limited by the reserve ratio, or fraction, that it is required to maintain. For example, when the reserve ratio is 10 to 1, a bank can create and loan $10 for each dollar held in reserve and charge interest on it. While the reserves of the goldsmith were gold, the reserves of the Federal Reserve is paper. Nothing more than bookkeeping entries that are a record of debt. The absurdity of the situation is that if there were no debts, there would be no money, since every dollar of paper currency and checkbook money is loaned into circulation. And in order to pay the interest, there has to be another loan, because the banking system only creates the principal and not the interest. In fact, the interest can never be paid, because it is not possible to return to the bank more dollars than were created. making it inevitable that the Federal Reserve banking system acquire title to all wealth in the nation. This is exactly what the framers of the Constitution intended to prevent when they stipulated a monetary system of gold and silver coin and prohibited the government from issuing paper money. Because a nation that uses money based on debt can never be free of debt.
Paper money, paper money. It's a federal trick without a treat. It's the source of all inflation and the reasons why your ends don't meet.
The only source of inflation is the Federal Reserve banking system, consisting of the 12 Federal Reserve banks dominated by the Federal Reserve Bank of New York and the nation's commercial banks. Increasing the amount of currency and checkbook money increases inflation. Creating new dollars reduces the value of all dollars, resulting in higher prices. By manipulating the quantity of created dollars, the purchasing power of every dollar is altered. The expansion and contraction of an artificial money supply produces the cycles of prosperity and depression that have long plagued society. Depressions are the result of private bankers reducing the money supply by tightening credit and withdrawing currency, causing a drop in prices, unemployment, and foreclosure of property. This mechanism is premeditated theft. The purpose of the Federal Reserve Act that was given to the public at the time was that it would prevent panics, crashes, and depressions. What the public was not told was that the nation's leading bankers engineered those very events to encourage the public to demand what the bankers wanted. The strategy used is a classic example of Hegelian dialectics, a method to bring about change in a three-step process. The first step is to create a problem. What caused the panics, crashes, and depressions that led to the Federal Reserve Act was the same thing that later caused the crash of 1929 and the Great Depression. Manipulating the amount of credit and paper money, just like the goldsmith of old had done. The second step to what amounts to crisis management is to create opposition to the problem, an opposing force that will serve as a catalyst for action. For example, create anxiety and fear in the public so that they demand that government do something. The third step is to offer the solution to the problem that will lead to a predetermined goal, thus bringing about change that would have been impossible to impose on people without proper psychological conditioning. By causing emotional stress and mental confusion, judgment is impaired and suggestibility increased. Under these conditions, people can be manipulated into accepting something that is not in their best interest. This was the case with events that led to the Federal Reserve Act, which placed control of America's money system in the hands of private bankers. Thomas Jefferson warned against doing this when he said,
"If the American people ever allow private banks to control the issue of their currency, first by inflation and then by deflation, the banks and corporations that will grow up around them will deprive the people of all property until their children wake up homeless on the continent their fathers conquered."
When people conducted all business with gold and silver coin, it was a final transaction where payment was made on the spot, settling debts without delay. All paper currency was redeemable in gold or silver coin, thus conditioning the public to believe that the bank's promise to pay in wealth was as good as gold. By calling gold and silver money, and then calling banknotes money, the two blended together in people's minds so that gradually, over a period of time, The difference between them was erased from public memory. A promise to pay money substituted for lawful money until the promise was removed. Exchanging paper currency is an incomplete transaction until payment is made in gold or silver coin. Until then, it is both credit and debt, a record of a specific amount of money to be paid or received. Credit, which is deferred payment, and debt, which is a sum of money due, are the same thing, which is hidden by deceptive double-entry bookkeeping, where a debt becomes an asset by calling it a credit. Paper money that redeems nothing only appears to have value because it can be exchanged for things of value. When a piece of paper representing debt is exchanged for wealth, someone has been robbed. Paper money expropriates wealth from one person, then from another, then from another, and on, until the last person to get it will be stuck with it. What the first user, the bank, gets for nothing, the last user will get nothing for. The sole function of paper money that is not 100% redeemable in gold or silver coin is to get things without paying for them. Those who issue and control bank credit as money get everything for nothing. Bank credit is a device for confiscating wealth using magic with numbers, where numbers of nothing are exchanged for things of substance and value. This grand theft occurs in full view, unnoticed, because the public has been made an accessory to the crime by accepting pieces of paper with numbers on them in place of lawful money, not knowing the difference between the two.
Paper money, worthless money, it's a nation's curse since times of old. Things won't ever get no better till we make the Fed give back our gold.
Under fractional reserve banking, the amount of credit a bank can create is tied to the wealth on deposit for which the currency can be redeemed. This limitation was removed when gold was confiscated from the public to protect the currency system based on that gold. During the Great Depression of the 1930s, people who had gold on deposit in the banks wanted the banks to honor their contract to redeem the paper currency for gold. The fraudulent nature of fractional reserve banking was at risk of being exposed, because there was not enough gold on deposit in the banks to redeem all Federal Reserve notes issued promising payment in gold. On March 6, 1933, President Franklin Delano Roosevelt, by executive proclamation, declared a national emergency and closed down the banking system for 2 days on the recommendation of the Board of Directors of the Federal Reserve Bank of New York. On March 9th, Congress passed the Emergency Banking Act, declaring a national emergency and conferring on the President the extraordinary authority of the War Powers Act and the Trading with the Enemy Act of October 6, 1917, amended to place all money matters of American citizens under its jurisdiction. It became illegal for U.S. citizens to own gold under penalty of up to a $10,000 fine and/or up to 10 years imprisonment. People turned in their gold and gold certificates in exchange for Federal Reserve notes of created dollars based on debt, which bore a promise of redemption in lawful money. The circulation of gold coins and redemption of paper currency for gold ended, leaving silver dollars as the only lawful money available. Silver was eventually eliminated from the money system, leaving the American people with a totally debauched money system of irredeemable paper currency and copper nickel-clad tokens that represent a debt owed to the owners of the Federal Reserve banking system, the payment of which is guaranteed by the collateral of all property and income of all U.S. citizens. When banks cannot honor their contract to redeem their notes for gold or silver coin, they are, in fact, bankrupt. The contract between the people and the Federal Reserve, printed on each banknote, promising to pay in lawful money, was invalidated because the system went bankrupt and because the amended version of the Trading with the Enemy Act of 1917 placed all U.S. citizens in the category of enemy. And no contract is considered valid between enemies. American citizens were declared to be the enemy by their own government, for indeed they would be if the people ever discovered what had happened to their money. It is the responsibility of honest government to ensure that the money system serve the nation and not enslave the nation. We can be self-governing only when public servants are dependent on something citizens provide. When gold and silver coin were used as money, the people had control over their government. The golden rule of finance is that he who has the gold makes the rules. If the public has the gold, the public makes the rules. If the central government and central bank have the gold, they make the rules. The loss of the right to trade in wealth, such as gold and silver coin, enslaves the people to those who create and control what is being used as money. All it took to enslave America and the world was to convince people that paper and credit are money. The federal government and the Federal Reserve have the power to create unlimited amounts of credit because credit does not exist. It is not a tangible substance, but an idea represented by bookkeeping entries and computer symbols. The distinction between free men and slaves is whether or not they are paid for their labor. He who labors for money that the first user got for nothing is a slave to the first user, the banks. The Constitution established the use of both gold and silver coin as standard money to ensure the equal buying power of every dollar at all times. Honest money is nothing more than a transportation system to move goods and provide services. A credit system is nothing more than a slave system designed to control the population and all economic activity. Deficit spending is as phony as our money and illogical. How does one spend a debt? To pay means to deliver a substance as money, like gold and silver coin. Where there is no substance, there is no payment, only pretended payment. Banks do not really lend, they only pretend to lend. They put no money in a borrower's account. They only make bookkeeping entries that are reduced as the borrower writes checks against imagined deposits. By charging interest on a loan they do not make, banks impart psychological value to numbers of absolutely nothing. Charging interest sustains the illusion that banks loan something of value when all they do is rent illusions. Usury used to be defined as any interest charged for a loan. The modern definition redefines it as excessive interest. Any interest charged for a pretended loan is excessive. Interest, then, should be recognized for what it really is: tribute, a sum of money paid as acknowledgement of submission or as the price for protection. Tribute is extortion by a conqueror over the conquered. The so-called deficit is not really a deficit at all, but an asset the government gets in exchange for its role in the credit-creating scheme of the banking system. As the deficit grows, both government and bank assets grow, because the government and the banks acquire things of value with the credit they create out of debt. Banks should not be allowed to lend what they do not have, which is exactly what banks do. Banks enter credits and debits of nothing. They do not transfer honest dollars of gold and silver coin. What makes a check bad is the same thing that makes fractional reserve banking bad. insufficient funds, or rather no funds, as is the case. The words pay, borrow, and loan are meaningless without the means of payment. No one is paying for anything. Debts are being discharged with debt instruments, but no debts are being settled by payment in honest money, lawful money, constitutional money. There can be no liberty, no justice, no economic freedom without an honest money system. 3 years after signing the Federal Reserve Act into law, President Woodrow Wilson made the following statement.
Our system of credit is concentrated. The growth of the nation, therefore, and all our activities are in the hands of a few men. We have come to be one of the worst ruled, one of the most completely controlled and dominated governments in the civilized world. No longer a government by free opinion, no longer a government by conviction and the vote of the majority, but a government by the opinion and duress of small groups of dominant men.
When using wealth as a medium of exchange, government must receive wealth from its citizens to pay for goods and services. When using credit, government is totally independent of taxes and does not have to pay for anything, which the illusion of taxes conceals from public view. When the only thing on deposit in banks are bookkeeping entries, the honest payment of taxes is no longer possible because there is no honest money with which to pay. The notion of deficit spending leads the public to believe that the government spends more than it collects in taxes, when in fact Congress spends nothing and wastes nothing because no money goes to Washington as taxes. Taxes sustain the illusion that the numbers people call dollars have value, when gold and silver coin are the only honest money measured in dollars. Though nothing is financed by taxes, consumption, the public's capacity to use up goods and services, is reduced. Subtracting credits from bank accounts reduces consumption and eliminates previously created inflation. Consumption is regulated by taxing money, credit, away from people so they cannot spend it. Phony taxes regulate inflation. It is a safety valve to keep us from being drowned in paper and to keep prices from exploding to phenomenal numbers. A check to the Internal Revenue Service authorizes the transfer of numbers from one bank account to another. When bank deposits are only bookkeeping entries, taxes are an illusion that seem real when banks subtract numbers because there is less to spend. The tax system reduces public allotment of credit in order to destroy some of the bank-created credit so that the bankers and their government can continue to create more credit and with this credit get unlimited goods and services for nothing. This is the great secret and deception of modern money and taxes, the greatest magic show on earth. The Federal Reserve pumps money, credit, into the economy, and the IRS sucks it out of the economy, thus manipulating the purchasing power of the artificial money supply. The IRS is really the collection agency for the Federal Reserve. All so-called dollars collected by the IRS are transferred to the Federal Reserve as payment on the interest of the imaginary national debt. The Secretary of the Treasury is not the U.S. Secretary of the Treasury, because the U.S. Treasury was bankrupted in 1933. The Secretary of the Treasury is not paid by the United States government. The Secretary serves as the U.S. Governor of the International Monetary Fund, as receiver of the bankrupt United States, collecting the debt from U.S. citizens. America is owned by its creditors. the bankers own everything. The elaborate Internal Revenue Code, with its convoluted language, special definitions, and references to different chapters, subchapters, sections, and subsections, is nothing but a deep cover for the dishonest, irredeemable paper money credit swindle.
Paper money, funny money, it's a ticket stub to tyranny. Gold and silver is the answer. It will reinstate our liberty. We the people have the power. We can reinstate our liberty.
All the perplexities, confusion, and distress in America arise not from defects of the Constitution, not from want of honor or virtue, so much as from downright ignorance of the nature of coin, credit, and circulation.
A nation that uses money based on debt can never be free of debt.
The Federal Reserve System works only with credit. Credit.
Congress shall have power to coin money and regulate the value thereof. No state shall make anything but gold and silver coin a tender in payment of debts.
Wake up, America!
Wake Up, America, written and produced by Stephen Jacobson. MCIA Media, Mind Control in America Media. Breaking the Chains That Bind the Mind. Post Office Box 15734, Winston-Salem, North Carolina, 27113. The song Paper Money, written, produced, and performed by Carl Klang.